Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Welcome to the session. So today what I want to do is talk about deploying ADFS. Now, you notice I don't put a version number on it. So somebody have been people saying, which version of ADFS is? It doesn't have a version number. It's Windows ADFS Server 2012 R2. So you may see documented on the internet, you know, ADFS version 3. It's not. It's just known as ADFS running on Server 2012 R2. So any arguments on which version of ADFS is running, you just say, I'm running ADFS. So what I want to do is look at deploying this. Lots of questions to ask along the way. It is actually very simple, the deployment, but we need to answer some questions. And one of the first questions we'll need to ask ourselves is, do we really need to deploy this thing? All right, why are we deploying it? What are we trying to achieve with that deployment? I'm going to start off with just a very, very quick introduction to what's new in R2. And you will have, if you came to my troubleshooting session yesterday, you'll have seen that those same couple of slides. Be a slightly different focus. And then just to get everyone on the same track, what I want to do is just show you the protocol flow. So we know when we're making the decisions as to why we're deploying ADFS, we know how the protocol is going to flow. Because I've been talking to a lot of people this week about ADFS, Office 365, and why can't you do this and why can't you do that? And it's all because of the way the protocol flows for authentication. We'll then look at the installing ADFS, we'll look at installing the web application proxy as well and what that gives us. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about deploying at geolocation, because again, I've had quite a few questions about that this week. As if you want to have geo-distributed ADFS, how do you do it? What's the best way? So just a warning, I gave this warning yesterday, is just don't take anything you see, just stick it straight into production. Always test, always evaluate. In terms of a lot of the information I will give you is sort of based on my experience of working with this product for a number of years now. And it is quite a number of years I've been working with ADFS since it really first came out. And I've deployed it in lots of different scenarios for support, lots of different. I've done a very, very large SharePoint portal. I've done all sorts of e-commerce portals that are based on Federation. So that's my experience on it, but again, test it, take ownership of what you're about to do. And the demo environments, well, it doesn't really apply this time, but don't sort of say, oh, that's an ideal production environment. Demo environments are very much about getting an educational point over. Okay, so first of all, it's installed as a role, so you don't have to go and get it in terms of the ADFS. It doesn't use IIS anymore. Right, and that has a lot of advantages in terms of performance because it's using http.sys. Now, for a small deployment of ADFS, Microsoft suddenly recommended, for this was for Office 365 support, oh, you can put it on a domain controller. All right, and immediately, you know, bells started to ring and people say, yeah, but hang on a minute. For years, the advice has been never, ever put IIS on a domain controller from a security perspective. Probably, actually, you know, that advice for when it came out was actually very, very valid. The stack has got so much more secure now. But by putting it in HTTP sys and getting rid of IIS, you know, you've got the opportunity of putting on domain controller. How many of you have actually deployed a small lab with ADFS on a domain controller? Right, just a few. Anyone have trouble on the first reboot? Yeah, okay. On the first reboot, there's a problem. And basically, the ADFS service hangs or can hang. And I'll show you how we get around that if you want to do that type of work in terms of a lab test. Install files now are going into Windows ADFS, and do you really need to know that? Yes, you need to know that if you need to do some modification of any files. In particular, if you need to turn on logging, there's a couple of config files in there which will allow you to log for WCF, which is the Windows Communication Foundation, and WIF, the WIF, or WIF, which is the Windows Identity Foundation. Support for device claims. So this is really, really nice. Now, the support for device claims only comes in if you workplace join a device, right? But with ADFS running on Server 2012 R2, wouldn't it be easier if it was ADFS version 3? Never mind. With this particular version of ADFS, we can do a workplace join, which basically means a device is recognized, right, in the Active Directory. We create a device object in the Active Directory, and we deploy a certificate onto the device. So when the device connects in, we check the certificate, we check the device object in the AD, all right, and then we say, are we going to allow this device in? So we can make an authentication decision based on whether the device is registered, allow him in, or unregistered, block him. All right, so we can actually say that we're going to have in the only registered devices. Or if it's an unregistered device, you've got to use multi-factor authentication. Or if it's an unregistered device, we will only allow you access to certain applications. So these device claims are really, really useful in terms of making those authentication and authorization decisions. And as I say, we can do it on a global or per relying party. We can make policy decisions for authentication and, for that matter, for authorization based on location, i.e., are you on the internet? Are you local? Device type, are you a Windows 8.1 machine or are you an iOS device? All right, which one are you going to allow into your organization? You can make those sort of decisions. And then group membership as well. So on a group membership or even a user basis, I could say that particular group, you need to use multi-factor authentication if you're coming from the internet. And then in terms of customization, it's a lot easier if you want to customize the screens for the logon screens, much easier to do. There's no standalone setup. So if you're used to ADFS, you know, version 2 or 2.x, where it gives you the option, do you want to install a farm or do you want to stand a standalone? That's gone. And quite rightly, too, because you should really always install as a farm, even if you're just a single device, right? Because that gives you the opportunity of adding additional members of the farm in. And then we come to the device registration service. That's automatically there. And what the device registration service does is allows you to do workplace join. All right, so we can do a workplace join to the and it's the device registration service that picks that up. So automatically, into ADFS, you'll find the device registration goes in as a relying party. And then when we put a proxy on the front end, that device registration service is automatically available through the proxy. We don't have to publish it at all. And then the web application proxy itself, what does it do? Well, number one, it acts as the ADFS proxy. So if you're going to put an ADFS proxy in, of course, and if you're going to have an internet presence for your ADFS server, you must, all right? And then, so it does the ADFS proxy component. We can do application publishing, where we can publish an application through the proxy, all right? And when we come in, we're going through the proxy, so we do an HTTPS termination at the proxy, and then we can send on with HTTPS or not. We come through, we go to the application, and the application makes the authentication decisions. Or we can say, actually, do you know what? We don't want you through the proxy unless you're authenticated. Right. So at the point of hitting the proxy, so let's say I'm going to SRV1, server 1, the point of hitting the proxy, what the proxy will do is say, you need to be authenticated to get through me. All right. So what, and that authentication process is using ADFS. So what we'll do is we'll actually get a redirect to ADFS, which says, please, I want a token to get through the proxy. Right. And then we get through the proxy, then we hit the SRV1, and then SRV1 makes the decision as to what authentication it needs. So that's application publishing, where we just allow the application to be published through or with pre-authentication. And then if we use pre-authentication, what we can do is we can come in, we can hit the proxy. It says, you need to be authenticated. You go off to ADFS, you get a set of claims, including a UPN. And then you come back again, and you can go to a back-end Windows auth machine using Kerberos constrained delegation. So we can set that up. But of course, the UPN inside the claim set needs to be mapped to the back-end system. So a lot of new features added. So just, I'm going to do this fairly quickly, but and some of you will have seen these slides before, but it's important in terms of to appreciate this so we can understand our decisions on how and why we deploy. So the key concepts behind Federation is that we apply to a security token service, so ADFS, and we say, please, can I have a token to application X? And the security token service authenticates us, and it issues a token, and that token is specifically crafted for application X. Now, application X accepts the token and says, yep, that person's authenticated. Why? How? Because the token is signed, and it's a signature that the relying party trusts. So who signs it? It's the security token service. Who trusts it? It's the client. And it's a simple crypto signature. So what we need to do is make sure that those trusts are established for this thing to work. Right? And just bear that in mind when we talk about certificates. And then what goes on that token? Pretty much anything you like. And that's based on how you manage the claims. So we'll get claims out of the Active Directory, we'll put them into a pipeline, and then we'll process them specifically for application X. So application X, application Y, application Z can all have a different claim set presented to them. So if we look at the actual protocol flow, we browse the application says, you're not authenticated, and sends a redirect. Now, it's a browser. It's just a straightforward browser. So it just has to work using redirects, gets, posts, and so on. Okay? So we browse in, not authenticated, redirect. And we get a redirect to a security token service. Which security token service? The one the application trusts. All right? So up we go to the security token service, and we say, please, can I have a claims token for application X? And the security token service authenticates us, gets our attributes out of the Active Directory, and constructs a token for application X. So that tells you immediately that the security token service needs to know about application X. Next thing that happens, we send the token, and it's consumed by application X, and returns the page and whatever cookies it needs. Okay? If we involve another IDP, so we're going to be working with a partner, then what's going to happen is we browse up to our ClaimsAware app. You're not authenticated. The only place that ClaimsAware app can redirect to is a security token service it trusts. So up you go. That's your, let's call it your STS, all right? This guy says, well, actually, do you know what? I trust my Active Directory, and I trust this partner. And so it needs to do a home realm discovery, which is saying, you know, where is your home realm? Where is your identity stored? So we do the home realm discovery. We go off up to the partner, authenticate, and then we get a token back. Who can consume that token? The only person that can consume it is not the application, because the application won't trust it. Right? So it is our STS. So the relationship is between the partner and our security token service. And then we send that token back to our security token service. It processes the token and creates a token that the relying party can trust. Okay. So, as I say, I just wanted to cover this because it's important when we're looking at our options. So, reasons for deployment. Okay. You have your own claims-aware application. Someone says to you, we want to use claims for our application. So, and we've got your own users. So we need to go with that. We're going to need a security token service, right? You could, your .NET developers could create their own. I would not recommend doing that unless the people actually creating the security token service know all security implications of actually doing it, all right? So what we could do is deploy Active Directory Federation services and plumb that into our own AD. So now we can authenticate our own users against that, against the application by going up to our ADFS and getting the appropriate claims token. So there we are. And then you say, actually, do you know what? This application, we want to allow our partners access. So now we've got external users that need to come in. So what could we do? Well, we could put all those external users in our own AD. All right? And then you've got the nightmare of which external users do you put in there? Oh, they're sent over an email. Ah, but how do they log in? We need to know their passwords. All right? Or we do a password reset or, you know, it's starting to get difficult. And then you say, yeah, but, you know, if that partner user gets sacked, is anyone going to tell us about it so we can disable the account? So it, you end up in that nightmare scenario. So the best way to do it is to set up a trust to your partner organization, and your partner organization now is going to authenticate those users. All right? If those users get sacked, hopefully they're going to disable that account in their own AD. All right? Okay, somebody's going, no, maybe not. Hopefully they are. And what will happen is immediately they won't be able to gain access to your application. All right? So that's a good reason. Now, the partner says, hey, no, there is no way that we are going to set up federation. It's way too difficult for us. And you go, so how are we going to do this? Comes back to, do we put our partner users in our AD, or do we use a third-party identity provider, and we put the users up in that third-party identity provider? And you've heard an awful lot about an identity provider this week already. How about the Azure Active Directory, putting your partners up in there? And having a claims provider trust up to the Azure Active Directory. So now, somebody comes in, external users, not authenticated, bounce up to your ADFS, Home Realm Discovery says, oh, you know, need to go to Azure to get a token. And back you come with a token. Our ADFS service then takes the token, opens it up, runs claims rules against it, and gives you back a token that can be consumed by the application. Okay? So that's another very, very valid way of doing it. And then we go on for the claims-aware applications, I haven't actually said where they are. They could be on-premises, they could be in the cloud, all right? Because the claims-aware application, Fat Trust, doesn't need to talk to the ADFS server. It does, we need to be able to do, we can talk directly when we're setting up the trust using federated metadata or federation metadata, or we can do the whole thing out of band completely and just configure both ends, totally unrelated to each other. So you don't need to communicate. So these guys here could be up in the cloud, all right? And then we got another one where you've got a third party, and that third party is actually providing services which are claims-based, all right? And they will have a security token service. And you say, actually, do you know what? What I'd like is my users to be authenticated by our on-premise AD, right? Because we've spent hours and days and weeks and months setting up the right policies, the right multi-factor, and all the rest of it. So we don't want them to be authenticated by someone else. So what we can do here is we can actually set up a trust to our own ADFS. And so now the user hits the third-party service, is bounced to their STS, which bounces us back to your STS, and you authenticate against your own AD. Right? And that, if you look at the Office 365 mode, is how what's going on if you use single sign-on with Federation. Now, if you're thinking about an STS and you're thinking about an enterprise STS, right, you've got an enterprise STS and you're authenticating everyone against it in the organization. And then you have all of your applications, hundreds of applications, and you start putting in relying party trust to all the applications up in the enterprise STS. Relying party trust, we're going to set up claims rules which are going to authorize access to our applications, right? So it's a tall order to do it all up at an enterprise STS. So one of the ways you can deploy this is to have a resource STS which is owned by a business unit, right? And then the apps for that business unit sit underneath the resource STS. Who manages the resource STS is the business unit owner, right? And then you can create the rules for those applications and keep the rules close, right? So now, up here, what we're doing is we're creating a token which has minimal information on it, enterprise-style information, so maybe some enterprise group or enterprise claims, and then we come back to the resource which actually populates a claim set which then authorizes to the individual applications. So it's a design that you can certainly think of when you're deploying. And then we have the challenge. Our users are going up to this third party, and with the third party, it needs to know something about your users, right? And what it can do is it can go off and get a claim, but by the time it's got a claim back from your organization and presented it back, right, when does it start to know about the user? Only until after they've logged on. And actually, maybe it needs to know about the user before that user logs on. All right, so it can make decisions at log-on time about that user. So what you end up doing is you end up either doing a sort of onboarding process. So the user comes into a registration screen, supplies their email, other details about themselves, and does an authentication at that point. Right? Or what you do is you do some form, of synchronization between your AD and or your data source for the users and the other organization. So now they know about you. And of course, this is what Office 365 does, because when I go in to log in to Office 365, what it will do is if you're using the Active Directory or the Azure Active Directory, when we actually put our login name, what it can do is it can actually take you to your own customized login with your logo and everything else. So let me just very, very quickly show you that. Let's just pop over to my machine here. Let's just... So I can go up, and I can go up to, in here, my apps. And here is Azure Active Directory. It's a common landing page. It knows nothing about me at this point in time. But as soon as I put in here, I'm going to go in as Maria at xtseminars.com. All right, as soon as I've done that, what it's done, it knows which is her home tenant realm, all right? So it's customized the landing page now. All right, so that's really important that it knows about that. The other thing that, in terms of Office 365, it wants to know which services that user is provisioned to. But it also wants to know is if you've decided to do single sign-on, it needs to know it's a federated user, All right? So when you go in and we type to Maria at xtseminars.com, it says, we federate with your organization. So it redirects you down to your ADFS logon. Right? So we do need that information up there. Now, question is, do we really need ADFS? And why are we deploying it? Well, we know because we want to support claims apps, right? And if you think about the Windows or the Microsoft Azure Active Directory, what we've got up there is all our users, which we can do with synchronization. We've got a management portal. We've got REST APIs. We've got graph APIs for grabbing information out of there. We've got synchronization from our own AD. And then you can manage your Azure subscription. You can manage your Office 365. You can authenticate the end. Your apps, partner apps. And now they've got the application gallery, which you've probably seen this week. But just to, for those who actually haven't, what we've got here is now I can log in. So Maria's going to log in. I hope the session didn't time out. No. And what it's doing, she's gone to My Apps, and now our administrator has published the applications she's allowed to use for single sign-on. And there's two ways these apps can work. They can work by actually being federated, or we can simply, I mean, there's something like, I don't know, 1,500 apps available today, and they're rapidly increasing. We can do that, or we can actually store credentials on a per application basis against her account. So actually, I've got done that. So if I just click on Google here, it's automatically going to get the Google username and password out of the directory, and we're logged in. In fact, we're logged in with my account because Maria didn't have an account. But just gives you an idea. So question is, do we really, really need to deploy ADFS? And if you go and you've got on-premise ADFS versus federation with AAD, so single sign-on, all right, is via on-premises AD credentials. So if we're actually federating, we're going to use our own AD credentials. If we're inside our organization, then we can seamlessly pass our credentials through to ADFS, and we can use Kerberos to ADFS. This is inside our internet. We can use our on-premise authentication policies. We can use on-premise authentication methods, so multi-factor, etc. And this is a key. This is maybe a driver that you need this, the ability to control access to cloud services based on location, client type, and other attributes. So do I want my users to be able to access Office 365 if they're out on the internet? I can make that sort of decision. All right? Do I want them to access it if their device is not workplace joined? Again, I can make that sort of decision. Those sort of decisions you can't do if you don't do the single sign-on, right, where we're being actually brought down to our own organization to authenticate. If we leave it that we're just going to sync our users up into the Azure Active Directory, we're syncing our users, we're syncing the users' passwords up there, and they're using the same credentials to gain access to the Azure Active Directory, but they will need to sign on, but we lose this. Now, if we do do the single sign-on, then what it's going to require is on-premise ADFS infrastructure with high availability. That's really, really important. We've got high availability of the company's internet connection. Because think about it. All our remote workers, all right, dependent on Office 365 or some other third-party service, go up to Office 365, redirected to our own organization. If our own organization, ADFS, is not available because we haven't made it highly available or our internet connection is down, then all those remote workers are going to sit there unable to access Office 365. And so what's very, and there's a lot of requirements. What do you gain, though? And the biggest thing up there probably is you've got your, especially if you've done, you know, smart card, one-time password, log on to your AD, and you want to keep that, yeah, you get that advantage. Plus, the last advantage there is all these things about workplace join, location of access, and so on. So in terms of our architecture, it has to be highly available. So what we're going to have is our internet connection coming in. We're going to come in through the web application proxy farm. We're going to go through a load balancer firewall to our ADFS farm. And then we've got this thing called the configuration database that we're going to need to deal with. Anyone outside, remote users, are going to, when they go to the redirected to adfs.example.com, they will end up coming in through the internet load balance connection. And if they're inside the corporate network, they will end up coming directly to the ADFS farm itself. And as I say, you know, we can do automatic logon, so the username password is passed directly through. So questions around there, there are a few. So DNS, number one, we've got to set up DNS. So if you're out there in the wild, you come to our proxy. If you're internal, you come to our ADFS farm. The perimeter, the web application proxy on the perimeter needs to resolve sts.example.com to the internal one, all right? And there's a couple of ways of doing that. You may say, well, actually, you know, I don't want this thing. It's outside there in my DMZ. I don't want it to actually access my DNS internally. Well, you could use host files, all right, to do that connection. If alternatively, you make sure that it actually goes to the internal DNS. So there's the two options there. Now, the device registration service, this is where we workplace join. And when you workplace join, what you'll do is you'll specify who your workplace join at, right? So john@example.com. And what it will do is it will do a lookup, and it'll do a lookup in DNS for enterpriseregistration.example.com. So john@example.com is my UPN, all right? So I will need to CNAME that to sts.example.com, all right? I also have inside my network, all right? I have, you know, John, or you know, what should we have? debbie@xyz.com. All right, so now I need a CNAME for xyz.com or enterpriseregistration.xyz.com to go to sts.example.com. Everything coming in is HTTPS. So I will also need to add all of those UPNs or enterpriseregistration.upn suffix. I will need to add that as a subject alternative name in my certificate. All right, so there's a little bit of work to get the device registration service working. So every UPN you use in your organization will need to be CNAMED with enterprise registration on the front of it to your security token service, and then the subject alternative name will be needed in the certificate. So installation prereqs, decide on the configuration database. So configuration database, what are we gonna use? We need to install the SSL certificate into the local computer store on each farm node. So we'll need to do that. And that SSL cert, remember, will need to be for sts.example.com plus enterpriseregistration.upnsuffix.com, where all those SANs listing. We need to enable the creation of a group managed service account. It's not required, but it's recommended, all right? And we'll come back as to exactly what that is in a moment. And our Active Directory needs to be at Windows 2008 or later, all right? And again, we'll come back to some further caveats on that. And we need to be at server 2003 functionality or higher. Okay, so our internal, or our database, all right? We can use the Windows internal database, all right? And each farm member holds a copy of that database. So here's one farm member, copy. Somebody does the read writing and is the master database, right? And then that gets replicated out to all the secondaries. You can change with a bit of PowerShell script, you can change who the primary is. So it's easy enough to fail it over. Something goes wrong and you've just lost your primary, no problem, all right? You can actually just run a bit of PowerShell and bring up someone else. And, you know, yeah, you could be down for a while, but unless you're going to be changing things, it's not going to affect the integrity of your ADFS service. The subsequent servers are, say, they're called the secondaries. Changes replicated every 5 minutes. Really nice and easy to do. Issue. There is a maximum of 5 farm members. Now, 5 farm members to actually do authentication is, you're going to have to have an awful lot of users to need more. All right? However, you say, what we'd like is geo-redundancy. All right? So we put 2 farm members here. We put 2 farm members here, and someone says, hey, I don't want double sites. I want 3 sites. We're going to put this one up in the cloud. And you go, ha-ha, we've only got 1 server left, right, if we use WID. Right, so just bear that in mind. I will come back on geo-redundancy later on. SQL, yeah, you've got to obviously add the appropriate SQL redundancy. If you use WID, it's redundant. Right, you have a master, secondary, 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 secondary. I don't know whether that was 4 or 5, but 5 in total, okay? SQL, you've got to make it redundant. So 2008 or newer, all right? No theoretical limit to the farm size, all right? So you could make it the farm really big. Now, what it also does is it adds, all right, functionality that is not available in the WID. So it does this thing called SAML artifact resolution. And you think, what is SAML artifact resolution? Well, when you go off and you get a token, all right, the token will actually come back in a page, all right? So it actually gets put into a hidden form and is passed back as a page. And the token can be encrypted. But what if you wanted a much bigger token, or you didn't actually want the token going back to the client machine? What the SAML protocol will do is allow a pointer to be passed back to the token. And the token remains up here until someone comes to retrieve it, right? So that is your SAML artifact resolution. So we can go back and we can get the token. Can't do that unless you're using SQL, all right? So that's one thing. The other thing is that we've got the SAML and WS Federation token replay detection, right? So if you're worried about tokens being replayed, and you may not care, right, because the target application will actually manage token replay detection itself. Right? But if you want to use token replay detection, again, you need a SQL database to do it. And it does it for the WSFed protocol and also the SAML protocol. Now, WID, interesting. This is a challenge that's actually just very recently come up. There is now in ADFS, there is support for OAuth 2. And OAuth 2 is becoming an extremely important protocol for accessing. So how do you get authorized to a web service today? You use OAuth 2, all right? And it's sort of becoming the de facto standard. It came from the consumer protocol market, whereas SAML and, you know, WSFed was from the enterprise. But now OAuth 2 is coming into the enterprise. It's used for, in terms of Microsoft, it's used if you do workplace join. It's used if you do work folders and publish work folders out through ADFS and the web application proxy. So it's important to you. The problem is, the way it works, it uses what's called OAuth 2 code grant profile, which means what happens is you go off and you retrieve, you get authenticated, you retrieve a code, all right? So now the client has a code and then goes back and swaps the code for a bearer token. And this is like a security token. It's not a SAML token. It's a JSON web token, or JWT, or JOT, all right? And then it comes back, and now it's got a token that will allow it, for instance, to go to a web service and so on. Challenge, web farm, all right? We go, get the code, and we go back, right, swap the code for the token. Where does the token reside? It resides on the ADFS server that issued us with the code, right? And this is a challenge. If it's a farm, it's possible you go back somewhere else, right? You don't want it broken. So what Microsoft have done, they've done an extension, which is the Active Directory Federation Services auth code lookup, all right? And what this does is when you go back with the code and this guy says, huh, I don't have the code, but it looks and it says, oh, I know a man who does, and then it can go off and retrieve the code from the other, sorry, it can retrieve the bearer token from the server that is actually holding it. Now, that's fine. So that just works out of the box. And you try and look it up on the internet, you will find virtually nothing about this at all. But it sits there, it works. If you decide to go geo-distributed, all right, geo, come in here, go in there for the code, there's no way it can go and retrieve the token. All right? So that gets broken. And I'll talk more about that shortly. But if you go for SQL, you don't need this. You don't use this protocol because the SQL database, the artifact store, is replicated between all. But if you're using WID, this could be a challenge. Not if you're going back to the same farm, but if you're going to a different farm, as in a geo-distributed system. The ADFS farm SSL cert, say sts.example.com or star.example.com if that's what you want to use, wildcard. Make sure that CRLs, etc., are all available and can be got at. And then what you need is the subject alternative name. You can't do a, for the enterprise registration, you need the actual enterprise registration .upn for each of those UPN suffixes within the organization. And then, so that needs to be added, and use the same, the recommendation is use same cert on all nodes of the farm, use the same cert on the WAP farm nodes, and obtain the certificate from public CA. So that's the sort of recommended way of going. Group managed service accounts, great. You've probably came across managed service account previously. Problem is a managed service account. Who's responsible for changing it? The computer on which it resides. And therefore, we can't use it across a farm. Group managed service accounts, new service to support it, and that's the key distribution service, right? And that sits on a 2012 DC, and we need a minimum of two DCs to 2012 to support this service. You can do it with one, but it's not recommended, because if it goes down, you've lost your KDC, your key distribution service. And what happens is you get a password, 120 characters. Who sets it? It's the KDS that sets it. And then certain services or computers are allowed to go and retrieve it. Right? You can retrieve this. And this means that now we've got the group managed service account running on all farm members. The password is being changed by the key distribution service, and these guys can all go and retrieve it. To get it to work, what you need to do is you need to establish a KDS root key, all right? And you can just go add KDFS root key, effective immediately, and it's effective immediately, except it's not. It's effective immediately after 10 hours, all right? You can't use it for 10 hours, the idea being that it guarantees this thing is replicated throughout the whole of your forest. All right, so there could be no troubles with it. Now, if you're doing it in a test lab or you're doing it and you know where the replication needs to take place and it's all within one site to be able to work with your ADFS servers, what you can do is you can put a dash effective time minus 10 hours. And what that will do is it will then allow it to be used immediately. So creating the MSA account, you can do it with a bit of PowerShell. However, let the wizard do it for you, because there's a number of things on there. We need to set the service principal name. The wizard does it for you. You also need to set the principals allowed to retrieve managed passwords property of the service account. The wizard does it for you. So you can do that as well. If you want to install ADFS on a DC, you can do that. It's a supported way of doing things. The trouble is, on your first reboot, having installed it and say, hey, we've got it all working, first reboot, ADFS can stop ever starting. It sort of just sits there and hangs. And the reason it sits there and hangs is for the ADFS service to come up, it needs to access the key distribution service. And if it can't, it tries to start the key distribution service, and you end up in this sort of race condition where they just don't start up. So what you need to do is, on the ADFS service, is change the dependency. This only applies to if you're putting it on a domain controller. You change the dependency. By default, it's dependent on HTTP. You make it dependent on HTTP and the KDC, the KDS service as well. Validating the install, one of the things you can do is access the federation metadata. The other thing you can do is you can try an IDP-initiated sign-on. And this gives you a bit of faith that things are working. So, yes, we can access, so http.sys must have been configured properly, our certificates, etc., because we're getting to the federation metadata, and then we do an IDP-initiated sign-on, and it will actually sign us in, so we now know our ADFS server is signing people in. So very good starting position. So what I'm going to do is a very quick demo of actually sort of going, setting this up, and I need to go across, first of all, to my ADFSP server, and what I'm going to do here is start by fixing the issue with the, in fact, I'm going to set the issue with the service. So if I do an SC, and it's SCQC, and it's ADFSSRV, and, oh, sorry, I need to be in the command prompt, let's grab, just grab that. And let's just do a CMD on there. Okay, and what we can say, are you okay in the back with the font size? No, okay, then we need to do something about that. I hate zooming in. I can zoom in, but the problem is if I zoom in, that's not gonna work. Let's go there and turn it up, hey, about 20 point. Is that, that's still too small? I tell you what, I'm going to zoom in. All right, so there we are. That's the what it's showing is the dependency is HTTP. Okay, so I'm going to change that now, and I'm going to go over, and I'm actually going to change the dependency. So it's this time it's SC config, and it's the ADFSSRV. And what we need to do is say depend. So don't lose the dependencies it's already got. So in here, it's depend equals, and we're doing a HTTP, and then it's a slash for another service. So it's the KDS SVC, so the key distribution service as well. Do that, and if we just go back, we can now see that both of those are actually in there. So the dependencies HTTP and the key distribution service. Okay, so now that as I say, it's only required to do that if you're doing this on a domain controller. And what I'm going to do now is I'm actually going to go and start the install. Now I've actually installed on here. I've already put the service in as the role. So I'm going to go to post role work and configuring the service. So the first thing it says, what do you want to do? Do you want to create the first federation server in the federation server farm or add a federation service? I'm going to go for the first one, okay? And I've got, who am I doing it as? Well, partner administrator, what I'll do nicely. And then I'm going to go for my SSL cert. So I'm choosing my SSL cert in there, and we need to give it a name. So I'm just going to call this XT Seminars. Next on there. And then it's saying group managed service accounts are not available because the KDC root key has not been set. Okay, so let's just go and grab, I've actually got this in here. Let's grab this. So this is ADFS KDC root key effective time, and I'm taking 10 hours off the effective time. So let's just grab that, pop that into, let's just put that exit here. because I need to be back in PowerShell to do this. And it's wait a second, and I will actually I'll actually zoom it in 1 second. So I'm just going to do a get KDSS root key and do that. So now what we can see is we've got in here, we've created this root key, and we can see that the effective time, so goodness me, it's 20 past three in London. We can see the effective time is 5 o'clock in the morning in the UK. So it's taken 10 hours off. So now it can immediately be used. So let's just go out there, put that down there. And then on here, we're going to create a managed, let's go back, let's go forward again, create a group managed service account. And what I'm going to do in terms of the group managed service account, I'm going to call this guy, and so ADFSP dash, what did I decide on, farm dash SRV. So that's the group managed service account. And then I'm going to use the Windows internal database, but notice here I can now specify the string for my SQL database next on there. And what's going to happen now is we take a view of script. Next, it gives me a warning about the root key in here, but I know it's okay. If I hadn't set the effective time, it would actually fail the install at this point. But what it's doing, it's carrying on with this warning about the root key. And if we go back here, what we can see is it's given us the script to do the install, which is really, really easy to do a scripted install. And this is the thumbprint of my SSL cert. So let's see how that's cooking. Oh, configuration error, I don't like that. Connection was established with the server, and then the error occurred during the login process. Oh, okay, that's not meant to do that. okay, I tell you what, I'm going to use one I did earlier, because I don't want to go through and troubleshoot that, because we're going to run out of time, and there are still important points. But basically, I mean, I've not seen that error before, and this is sort of typical with sort of demos that you do live. Sometimes I record them when they're really complicated, but this I thought was a really nice, simple demo, and it shouldn't have failed on me. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to the slide deck so we don't actually lose any of our time on here. So that would complete the install. And the next thing is, if I want to add additional farm members, what I do here is I will connect to the Active Directory domain service, need to specify the credentials I'm going to do it with. I'm going to specify the primary federation server in the existing farm. Okay. If we look at that, we specify the primary server, but what is it for? It's to pick up the WID database, because that's where all the configuration is going to come from. If we go for SQL, we're basically just giving the information about the SQL database, so we're not actually needing to specify what the farm is, right? Because it goes to the SQL database, and it gets that information. If we carry on from that, we'll need to specify the SSL cert. We will need to specify the group managed service account. And then if we look at the ADFS farm node, what we'll see is we've got the certificate that we'll actually be using. And the add an ADFS farm node will actually add these additional nodes. So it's very, very easy to add additional nodes into the farm. All we need to do is specify the certificate. And the credentials, and identify the group service account identifier there. Customization. I just thought, rather than going into all the details of this, I just took this from the Microsoft TechNet, and basically it refers to the illustration, the logo, the sign-in description, and also the home privacy and help links. Right? This is a very, very simple customization to do. I recommend you go and have a look at that particular location on TechNet. So it, as I say, it's very easy to do that customization, a lot simpler than previously. If you want to do additional customization, that's also possible as well. If you need to replace the SSL cert, you're probably familiar with, you know, how do you replace an SSL cert in IIS? Easy, all right? How do you replace an SSL cert on http.sys? And you think, a bit more difficult. Probably I should be using something like NetSH, all right? But there is a PowerShell to help you do it. So what we do is, in terms of list the certificates with get child item, right, so we can list our certificates, choose the certificate we want to do, and then we simply do set ADFS SSL cert, and we supply the thumbprint. Where do we get the thumbprint from? By the get child item above. And if you need to do it on the ADFS server, you're probably going to need to do it on the WAP node as well, and then on the WAP, it's set web application proxy SSL cert. So what does our web application proxy do for us? And this is a slide I actually used yesterday when we were talking about the troubleshooting. So what WAP does, it acts as a proxy for ADFS, right? And just install it. You don't have to do anything else for it to be a proxy for ADFS. It just works. And then what we've got is we've got pass-through to web applications, right? So basically, we publish web apps through the proxy. And then we've got this concept of the ADFS pre-authentication, which is where we come to the proxy and we need to go off to ADFS to get a token to get through the proxy itself before presenting to the claims-aware application at the back. Or the last one is before we can use the Kerberos constrained delegation to go through to the application at the back end. So what are our WAP requirements? We can use one or two network cards, and in some scenarios, you can run direct access and a VPN on your WAP device, all right? It's a little bit complicated as to what you can and you can't do in terms of direct access and VPN. So if you say, actually, no, I want this to be my VPN access, or I want it to be direct access as well as a WAP, then have a look at that particular TechNet article, which will tell you, nice table, which I didn't think bother putting in the slides, which will tell you what you can and you can't do. So it's much easier for you to read it when you know what you're thinking you want to do, rather than just putting it up for the sake of putting it up. You need the ADFS SSL cert on each node, and remember, your best way is to have a public cert, so CRL checking and all the rest, chaining to root, etc., all just works, because the client's coming in. All right, so your client's there, if it's one of your clients, then you could deploy your root certificate from your own CA to that client. But of course, we're talking about letting other people in, partners. We're talking about letting iOS devices in, all right, which is really quite tricky to put a certificate on that's out of your own CA. You can do it, all right, but much easier to have a public cert, and then it all just works. And then you're going to need the certificate required for each published application as well. And then to use the Kerberos constrained delegation, the WAP itself must be domain joined. So if you decide, I really, really want to use Kerberos constrained delegation, right, then your WAP will need to be domain joined. You got your WAP, you got your firewall, you got your ADFS. Remember, you're going to have to open this firewall up to support a domain-joined device, because this WAP is going to have to go off and talk to the Kerberos server, because what's going to happen is it's going to come in with pre-authentication, it's going to get a token. Inside the token is going to be the UPN, and we then take that UPN and we use Kerberos constrained delegation by talking to the Kerberos server to actually get a Windows auth token, which then goes in the header to the backend system. And it uses, so in coming here, it's using claims, going from the WAP to the backend system, it will use Kerberos. Well, but it will be Kerberos in the HTTPS header, or the HTTP header, for that matter, to the back-end system. So installing the web application proxy, we just go through the process of, we've got the remote access service going in here, we've got the web application proxy we choose. So it's not actually obvious where you find the web application proxy. It's a remote service role. That's why I particularly put these two slides up there, because you sort of look at all the roles and features, you know, and you look at ADFS, and yes, there's the ADFS there. Where's this web application proxy? Remember, it's a remote access role. And then in terms of running the wizard, all we need to do is specify the ADFS service name. We've got a username which needs to be able to talk to a local account on the Federation server. And then we select the proxy to use on the we select the certificate to use on the proxy. And I'm not going to actually install this because, I've lost the ability to do that because I don't have my ADFS thing. But what I want to do is sort of do the post-install, and I'm going to switch over here, and you're going to use a second set of... So ADFS. So once you've finished the install, what you'll discover, which is new to this version of ADFS, is you'll discover endpoints that are new. So let's just do this for the guys in the back row. So we have this OAuth2 endpoint, and you think, I'm not going to use OAuth2, but remember, workplace join uses OAuth2. If you're publishing your work folders, it will use OAuth2. So we're publishing our thing. So OAuth2 is important to us. In terms of certificates, we have actually the encryption certificate. Let's just zoom that. We have the encryption certificate in there, and we have the token signing certificate. So those two certificates, by default, they're self-signed, which is absolutely fine. There's no security advantage in having a CA-issued certificate. Because if we think about it, what happens is that when we're establishing a relationship with a relying party, what we're going to do is, in part of establishing that relationship, we are going to give the public key for the signing certificate to the relying party. Right? In fact, we give the public key every time we send a token over. What the relying party needs to know is the thumbprint of that public key. Right? So you want to revoke it, change it. All right? So you've got the capability of revoking it. Why do you need to chain it to root? As part of the establishment, right, you've effectively validated it. Because the idea of chaining to root is, if I go to an SSL website, right, I need to validate the certificate. How do I do it? I chain it to root. Right? In this situation, I've done this swap between two collaborative parties, right? And I've established that trust at that point. So the advantage of leaving them as auto rollover is that leaving them in here as auto rollover is that you don't have to worry about rolling them over yourself and managing the rollover. What you will need to do, though, is know how, if these roll over, how you update the relying parties. That is very important. If we go across to the claims description, we'll see here, if we go zoom in again, these are really nice. Device registered, all right? Device OS type, device OS version, is it managed? And this is for a device managed by Intune, right? So mobile device management. And so now we can make decisions based on the device. You've also got the client IP in there. And so again, decisions based on the actual client IP. If we come down into claims provider trust, the only claims provider trust you'll have is to the Active Directory. And in terms of relying party trust, the only relying party trust you'll have is to the device registration service. Claims app is one I put in earlier. And then in terms of authentication policy, what you'll find now is you have this primary global setting which says, if you're on the extranet, which is the internet, use Forms Auth. If you're in the intranet, use Windows Auth, but you can make changes. You could have Forms Auth and click Certificate, and the user will actually be saying, do you want to use Forms? Do you want to use Certificate Authentication? And then multi-factor, we can enable multi-factor, and we can say, I want anyone in this particular group to use multi-factor, or I can say, I want multi-factor used for unregistered devices or registered devices, or if you're coming from the extranet or the internet. In there, by default, is certificate authentication, but you can add also the ability of doing multi-factor, such as using Microsoft Phone Factor or add third-party. That can be done globally, or it can actually be done on a per-relying party basis. So here, I can do it on my claims, and I can say, for this application, I need to use multi-factor if I'm coming from an unregistered device. So a huge amount of flexibility on actually managing that. And that's probably one of the major, major advantages of the new version of ADFS. And that may be why you want to use ADFS SSO on-prem, because you want this control over who can do what based on their location and the device type they're coming from. In terms of network load balancing, you can use NLB. Probably if you're doing anything complex, you'll want to use a hardware load balancer. If you do put ADFS on domain controllers, you cannot use NLB. So if you're doing a simple install to test things out, you can't use NLB if it's on domain control. Firewall ports, you've got to obviously have 443 enabled. And 49443 needs to be enabled if you're using certificate authentication. If you're going to use Kerberos constrained delegation, then basically here you've got a domain joined, which is the other side of a firewall, and there's your domain. You're going to have to set this guy up so you can support a domain joined device through the firewall. Okay. And then in terms of geo-redundancy, so you might have your data center where you've deployed your ADFS farm, you've deployed your proxy farm, you've got your load balancing, your firewalls in. And then what I've seen is you're coming in with forms authentication and you're hitting the ADFS farm and all that's working beautifully, except things are not very performant. And you go, but hang on, I've already got two servers. So let's put some more in. So now you've extended your farm, and you've got four proxies, and you've got four ADFS servers, and still things are not particularly performant. You go, what's going on here? And suddenly you realize you're saturating the port DC, all right? And that's been your problem from the start. So what we've done is we've actually, when we do this, we can actually create AD sites, and they don't have to be on separate subnets. What you can do is you can just increase the subnet mask on the site definition so they logically appear in different sites. And so when this ADFS farm member goes to find a DC, it finds that one, and when that one, it finds another one. So you can actually make sure that you have a domain controller affinity for your site members. Now, if you're coming internally and you're hitting your ADFS proxies, then it doesn't matter at all because you're coming with Kerberos. All right, but if you're coming outside with forms authentication, it's going to make a difference. Or if you haven't set it up so it works properly with Kerberos and you're using NTLM, it will make a lot of difference as well. So now what we do is we create this thing geo-redundant. And the first thing is we've got the database to worry about. What are we going to do? All right. So we need a geo-DNS. So we are going to have both farms available at the same time, all right? Then maybe you have a farm out in, or you have a farm in the States and you have a farm in the Far East, all right? So what you want is geo-redundancy balancing on that. But the problem is the database. If we use the WID database, you're going to end up with a maximum of 5, all right? So if you're doing, you know, you've already used up 4 and that previous slide, right? If you want to bring up a third service in the cloud, you're in trouble because you could only have one ADFS up there. There's no SAML artifacts resolution, there's no replay detection, and it requires the ADFS OAuth authentication lookup code. Right? That is not going to work between different data centers. So if you had the client come in here and it got its code grant, right, and it went back over here to convert the code to a bearer token, it would fail. Right? Now, it's very unlikely that you will switch, right? But be aware that that is a potential issue. Right? The other thing is, if you use a SQL database, then what you do is you use SQL merge replication to make it work. But if we do that, what it won't do for you is actually do merge replication on the artifact database. So we lose the advantage of having SAML artifact resolution and replay detection. Right? If the client moves from this data center to this data center between requests, right? So if it got its token over there and tried to do a replay over here, we wouldn't detect it. If we get our token here and we do our replay here, it all works. So basically, if we're doing this, we want to try and keep our clients coming in to just one data center. Now, if you say, well, actually, do you know, I just want to do this redundancy. I want my two ADF servers here in this data center, and 200 yards up the road, I want another two in a different data center. All right? And you may not be able to do the geo redundancy because with no way we can detect geographically different locations for our clients based on, you know, a 200 meter or 200 yard separation. So what you could do is you could actually sort of have this set here on hot standby. So if you lose that data center, you're just ready to go and you just switch DNS over and this side's now running. So it's those sort of things that you need to be careful of. So clients should not be load balanced between the data centers, as in, you know, ending up here for one request and ending up here for another. In terms of migration, I've put in, if you want to migrate, there's a TechNet article there that is actually very useful for actually seeing the migration process that you need to go through. So again, we wouldn't have time to go through the migration today. I wanted to go over all the sort of basic decision making. And what I would say is you need to think very carefully about your reasons for deploying ADFS. And I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I'm saying you should ask yourself the question, do we actually need to do it? You might say, yeah, in the future, definitely, but do we need to do it today? Or again, just have that discussion. And I see now the Active Directory in Azure as being an adjunct to my on-premise Active Directory. So the future, I think, will be you have your on-premise AD, and you'll do all your single sign-on, possibly through the Azure AD. Do you need to federate back to your own? That's a decision that you will have to make. So I hope you found it a useful discussion on deploying ADFS. If you've got any questions, I will need to just clear up on the stage, and then I will be happy to answer them, and we can move out, if necessary, into the corridor to do that. But thank you for coming to the session. Hope you've enjoyed it, and maybe see you next year. Thank you.